101.1 The Sports Animal brings you inside the fight game of the MMA.
Oh my God.
With a weekly one-hour show.
Whoa!
In the Cage MMA Radio.
Dude, this might be a bad idea.
Hosts Vince Ferrara and Tim Loy bring you a unique perspective from inside the sport. Vince is an MMA lead commentator, cage side at many events. Tim Loy is a former MMA organization president and current matchmaker for Valor Fighting Challenge.
From the bottom of my heart, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Get big-time national MMA interviews, pay-per-view recaps and previews, matchmaking, predictions, strong opinions, compelling content, weekly things you'll learn, and more on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Three-minute rounds. We're underway in Knoxville.
Here's Vince Ferrara.
Welcome to In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal Weekly MMA. Thursday nights, our new day. Here we are, 8 to 9, at least for a while. And my co-host all the time is the matchmaker for Valor Fighting Challenge. He is Tim Loy. Tim, how are you?
I'm well, Vince. A lot to cover this week.
Man, how about that card last weekend? I mean, we talk about how sometimes these fight nights, there aren't big names on it, but somehow, whether it's controversy, drama, well-matched fights, we seem to have a lot of stuff to talk about coming out of those things.
Yeah, I didn't really expect that out of this most recent card, but lo and behold, here we are with, topics of conversation.
No doubt. So we'll have a full card recap of that, the aftermath from some of the things that happened there, and then also what's next for some of those fighters. UFC Vegas 21 from last weekend. We'll also name our winners and losers from that show because there were plenty of candidates of both the way some of those fights ended. And then we'll preview UFC Vegas 22 this Saturday night. And we've got an interview with KMAA fighter Draku Miley. He is an inspiration and has an unbelievable story. If you have not heard about Dre Miley, a lot of you that listen and follow Valor Fighting Challenge in the area, you may know about Dre already. But I think it'll be really cool even for you to hear from Dre on our show. He joins us in the next segment, in our interview segment. Our big three in our first segment, let's dive in. Number one is UFC Vegas 21 from last weekend. And Tim, we'll start with the main event. Once again, a UFC main event ends with controversy and an incomplete ending. Leon Edwards, Bilal Muhammad, a no decision via an accidental eye poke from Edwards to Muhammad. Scary watching Bilal Muhammad's reaction. I mean, he was crying, couldn't keep his emotions down because he was really nervous. He couldn't see out of his right eye that was poked. It looked nasty. Again, really unfortunate. What'd you make of the way this fight developed and then ultimately ended?
Certainly unfortunate. I thought Leon Edwards was looking pretty good out there. Had banked the first round on his way to banking the second round. I was starting to question whether or not Muhammad would indeed make it through five rounds, but then the eye poke happened, and man, was it something else. That was, if you look at the slow motion, and when you get like the capture of the actual moment, it's really nasty because it's actually almost like a hook. It's almost like his finger like hooks the underside of his eyelid. And you're right, Bilal Muhammad was wailing in there. I don't think I've heard a guy in there in so much pain before. And like you said, very much panic, you know. At the time, he couldn't see out of that eye. For all he knew, maybe he was blind in that eye forever. So, right. You know, I'm sure that we would have reacted probably worse in such a situation. Luckily, I have heard that the vision is beginning to come back to that eye.
Absolutely. Yeah. In no means am I doubting his toughness or anything like that, but it is scary. And you start thinking about long term. You know, Tim, with guys and their training and everything, they're in a mental state where it can be very emotional, right? And a lot of times it hits them after a fight. And I think that came rushing to them in addition to the anxiety of the moment also. So Michael Bisping brought up a really good point in saying, look, it's probably not anything with retina being being detached, maybe has a scratch on his cornea that will start to heal after a couple of weeks. And hopefully it was just something like that where he can recover from it.
Most definitely. And, you know, who knows how long he's going to be out. You figure that was an opportunity of a lifetime for Muhammad, who has, you know, been impressive, but for the most part been toiling on the mid to undercard. And so to be in this spotlight and situation and to kind of have it go down like that, I'm sure is certainly disappointing for him as well as Leon Edwards, who, you know, Dana White was on record saying if Leon Edwards wins this fight, he's got a title fight coming up. And so obviously now that is certainly in limbo, I'm sure.
Well, and he was pretty devastated also, because how long has he been waiting to get back into the octagon?
Yeah, he'd been out a couple of years at this point, it seemed like. And just, you know, for that to be how it all shook out has to be a major, major disappointment for him as well.
So was the no decision, was that right in your mind? Because Edwards had been warned once before about sticking those fingers out with the open hand.
Yeah, the fact that he was warned before kind of makes things a little fuzzy, I think. You know, that's where you have to kind of say, you know, look, did the referees already acknowledged the situation once? So now it's happened again. I wouldn't have had a problem with a disqualification there. I don't think that there is so much, intent as there would be, you know, like the knee to the head on the ground, like we're going to talk about here a little bit later. But yeah, in this situation, I don't think I would have a problem with a disqualification. It's just an unfortunate part of the sport right now that there is no perfect answer for as far as these eye pokes. You know, it's really tough to make these guys not use them as a feeler, if you will, to gauge distances with how they're used to using them, and then at the same time there's no way you can cover them up and force them to have a situation where they can't grip for grappling.
One last thing that you mentioned on that fight was that Edwards had the advantage in that fight. That leg kick that he had started things and putting Muhammad on his back foot, and Muhammad was never really the aggressor in the fight like you typically see him. So I'm with you. I think Edwards was on his way to a finish at some point.
Going into that fight, I probably would have been on the train that says that fight was going to be a decision fight. But yeah, the way Edwards was looking, I think he was on his way to a finish. So again, super, super unfortunate situation. And there's more to come of that.
Yes, no doubt. All right, let's run through these pretty quickly. Ryan Spann defeated Misha Cirkunov. That didn't last very long. 1:11. First round TKO for Ryan Spann. Bigger, more dominant.
Big win. And Cirkunov, you know, he's a submission specialist. So the train of thought here was if Spann's either going to overwhelm him and knock him out or potentially gas and get subbed or just get caught in a sub. But Cirkunov, he dropped him early, let him back up, showed good fight IQ. Then he finished him off. Good win for Ryan Spann. That's 10 out of 11.
And Spann said he wouldn't mind getting the winner of Crew versus Anthony Smith, which would be a fight against a top 10 opponent. Do you think he's worthy of that?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that's out of the question at all, honestly. I think that both Crute and Anthony Smith are kind of like trending backwards out of the top 10 as he's rising up, you know.
Also, another short fight. How about 22 seconds, even though Bisping and Cormier thought it lasted like 3 to 6 seconds. If they forgot, they're standing around and dancing a little bit. But nonetheless, Dan Ige, 50K Ige, with one shot, ended the fight against Gavin Tucker. You really thought this was a really nice matchup, Tim.
I thought this is going to be a firefight. I thought this is a fight of the night potential. Gavin Tucker's looked really good, has had some hype on him coming out of Canada. Is the Canadian scene is a little more barren, so he's one of their top prospects right now. But Ige really kind of made a statement and kind of puts himself in line for some big fights. I think now every time you see Dan Ige fight, it's pretty exciting, you know. So big knockout here, and you're right, like we're listening to the commentary and they're like, how long was that? That has to be some kind of record. And I'm like, no, am I crazy here? Because there's surely been a faster knockout than that. It was certainly impressive, but it seems like we've seen one faster.
And you can see that new cool rotating clock where the camera stands are, and it says 440 on it. So you knew it was like 20 seconds had gone by or so. Rest of the main card, and then you tell me what jumps out. Davy Grant demolishes Jonathan Martinez, second round KO. Nicolau defeated Cap. Tharboy goes down. That was a split decision. I think you might have an opinion on that. And then your boy, our boy, Eric Anders, ruled a no contest with Darren Stewart, Tim, on an illegal blow. It was a knee on a down opponent, which is what we saw in the last UFC pay-per-view main event. Unbelievable that it happened again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Davy Grant, I thought that that was a real nice upset win as a 3-1 underdog to Martinez. And he's quietly thrown together three in a row. Nicolau and Kopp, I thought that that was a little wonky. A lot of people thought that Kopp won that fight. 1-1 going to the third round. It seemed like Nicolau had the better positioning for the bulk of the round, but didn't do any damage. And then the last minute of the round, Kopp really had him hurt, almost out of there, but not enough to get the judges on his side. And then Anderson Stewart, man, very unfortunate. While that fight lasted, it was actually a lot of fun. Both guys had their moments. Both guys had the other guy rocked. But then Anders just with a really bad, you know, middle of the fight decision there, or the right after we saw a high profile instance with Aljamain Sterling and Petr Yan. So it's definitely disappointing, and that would have been a nice win.
You know, and Eric Anders, I thought, was very close to finishing that fight.
Yeah,
I thought he was winning the fight. He was very close to finishing it. I also thought he flirted with an illegal knee several times prior to that, held back, didn't do it, but then still did it again when there was that opportunity. And, you know, you just never know what kind of tunnel focus those guys have in the moment and block things out. And, man, what a terrible mistake. Saw on social media how apologetic he was for it, but it doesn't take it back because he was coming off of what he called an embarrassing last performance, and he had a chance to beat a pretty decent opponent and maybe move up a little bit, Tim.
100%. You know, it's been a year and a half since Anders has had a win, so he really kind of needed this one, I think. And he was on his way there. And one has to imagine, just like, you know, as the fight wears on, does fatigue just begin to really cloud your judgment making in there, your decision making? The fatigue, they were both kind of starting to get winded there by the end of that first round. One has to wonder if it started the second round with only 23 seconds to go, what would have happened?
Man, there was more drama in the undercard. Angela Hill beat Ashley Yoder. That was via unanimous decision. You were cool with that, right?
Oh, yeah, dominant. This is one of those fights where it's just like, why are we even doing this? And we're just kind of going, you know, it's already happened once. You know, the first one wasn't that close, and this one was not either.
Charles Jourdain beat Marcelo Rojo, third round KO. I was actually pretty impressed by Jourdain.
Actually, both of these guys. I thought that Rojo actually had a really nice performance for a debut guy going in tough against Jourdain. He just kind of ran out of gas in the third round after taking a lot of damage, but both guys put on a really nice fight. This is actually probably my favorite fight.
Ronnie Yahya beat Ray Rodriguez, does what he does, gets a submission victory. Does Ronnie Yahya, the vet, what do you think of that?
Yeah, you never can count out Yahya. He's getting up there in age, but he still does what he does better than anyone in the division.
Nasrat Haspirat looked terrific over Rafa Garcia, who had Cub Swanson in his corner. I thought it was 30-27 to me, but a couple of judges saw it 29-28. What'd you think?
I had 30-27, but I thought Garcia gave a pretty nice account of himself for coming in short notice against a guy like Hogprost, who's a really nice prospect. But Hogprost is a big old beast out there, 155, man. He's a hoss.
He looked bigger than that weight class. He did. J.J. Aldrich beat Courtney Casey via split decision. Tim, I didn't agree with this one. I thought Casey had the most significant strikes.
Yeah, absolutely. Casey did the damage, had the better strikes. Aldridge would get some takedowns and, you know, not really do a lot of damage. Yep. I thought Casey kind of got the wrong end of the stick here.
All right, winners and losers quickly, Tim. Give me your winner and loser, and then I'll name mine too.
For my winner, I'm going to go with Ryan Spann. He's a guy that even I was kind of maybe counting out here, even though he's quietly won 10 out of 11. I think he's just had those moments where he hasn't looked great against mid-level guys like Sam Alvey, but he also has the potential, you know, on any given night to look really good. My loser, I'm going to go with Gavin Tucker, who, again, as I mentioned earlier, was one of Canada's few remaining prospects, and they were really hyping him, and he just never got going out there, got flattened, and takes a big step back.
For my winner, I'm going to go Dan Ige. I thought he might move up a little bit more in the standings. He went from 9-8, but man, an impressive win like that to show that maybe he has more punching power, even though he always delivers exciting fights. Maybe he has that knockout power as well that maybe not everybody was convinced of. So there's a plus there. My loser, I'm going to go with Leon Edwards. You mentioned it, Tim. He was walking into a title fight, and if he would have won, he would have deserved it. I don't think that's coming his way just yet. I think he's going to have to work his way back. Now, is he going to be able to stay healthy? Is he going to be available for a fight prior to a title fight? So this really sets him back. It was his accidental eye poke that caused it. So I think there's a lot to lose there for Leon Edwards. All right, our number three in our three big stories. How about this? The announcement from Dana White this past Monday, Tim, UFC is moving UFC 261 pay-per-view to Jacksonville for a full fan capacity at the 15,000 seat ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena, April 24th, moving it from Vegas, and they're going to have three title fights now by also adding and moving up that Usman Masvidal 2 for Usman's welterweight strap to go with Shevchenko and Andrade and Weili Zhang and Rose Namajunas. Unbelievable. But the big story is they're doing it in front of no limited fan capacity in Jacksonville. This is a long time coming for the UFC and for sporting events as well.
Yeah, it's a big step, man. Obviously, I'm sure that all the eyes of the world will be on the UFC that weekend to see how this goes, how they pull it off, the aftermath in the, you know, say 2 weeks following such, you know, will we have these big spikes in cases down in Florida afterward? And will there be a lot of backlash and blowback as such or not? And if there's not, you know, does that begin to open the door for lots of other events to do the same? I'm not surprised they're coming out of the gate swinging with a big card here, with it being the first fight back in front of fans. And I wonder, a question for you, do you think, obviously we've got a welterweight championship fight here, we were told that Leon Edwards is going to get the crack if he won the fight, do you think that this would have been Usman versus Edwards had he got that win against Muhammad, or do you think they already had this in the works for Masvidal first?
I think they already had it in the works. I also think it's too quick of a turnaround.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. If you're planning that out, how do you know what kind of medical suspension that Edwards would have, even if he gets a dominant victory? So I think this is something they've been working on for a while, and I love it. And they're stacking this up like we just saw at 259, and we all really enjoyed that.
I think it's going to get better and better, too. I have a feeling we're going to get like a really loaded undercard, too.
Do it. Let's do it. Because what the last thing the UFC wants is to say we're going to go full capacity in arena and not have a full capacity because the fans hesitant to go and be crammed with other people. Then again, there are plenty of people that think that all this is done with. We'll talk a lot about it as we work our way to it. Lots to come still on the show. Preview of this weekend's UFC Vegas 22. But up next, we will visit with Draku Miley, inspirational MMA fighter from Knoxville. We'll talk to him next here on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Now it's time for In the Cage MMA Radio's weekly marquee interview, letting you hear from the personalities inside the sport. In the Cage.
If you are what you say.
Welcome back to In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal. I'm Vince Ferrara with Tim Loy. It is interview time. So, you know, we do it right when it comes to interviews, whether we're talking to UFC fighters, broadcasters, people in the industry, or fighters that are working their way towards the big time. And we've got a fantastic guest. We've talked about him a lot and talking about Valor Fighting Challenge. And he joins us right now. Draku joins us from the KMAA camp in Knoxville. He will be back in action April 2nd for VFC. Dre, Vince, and Tim, how are you, my man?
Doing good, man. Doing really good. How about yourself?
Man, we're good. Before we tell your backstory, let's talk about you and what you've done in your pro MMA career so people know who you are, and then I think it will resonate some more when they hear how you got there. So let's talk about you right now, 7-3 as a fighter. You got your next fight coming up April 2nd against No Way Jose Johnson. How would you, Dre, describe your pro MMA career to this point?
I really don't know. Really never really thought about how to explain it. It's mostly just youth. Like, I've not been pro very long, maybe about 5-6 years. So as opposed to everybody else who's been at it for a long time. So it's just being young and then learning how to do things that I normally do in the gym and trying to bring them out to the fight. So the whole pro career to this point has been nothing but growth and figuring out who I am as a fighter. So kind of like learning as I go, you know, with Eric, being the mastermind that he is, he has this thing of pulling out the best version of you. And it's really been coming great. Here recently, I've learned that I am not the fighter that I was 10 fights ago. So this fight should be a totally different person.
Well, let's get into, a little bit of your backstory, man. You know, we've talked about you in the past. We've not actually heard it from you. You're missing, one of your eyes that you lost in a car accident, several years back. So if you wouldn't mind kind of giving the backstory on that and kind of how that has affected your career up until this point.
Yeah. Well, I'll just tell you the backstory, just a overshort version of it. I had lost it when I was 17. I was getting ready to graduate high school, so if that tells you anything. I was playing football. We had these things called senior projects, and I was on my way to do a senior project, which was over coaching. And one of my buddies was doing the same thing, and he happened to be part of a basketball league. So he was like, hey, you come be my assistant coach, and we can knock this out together. I was like, all right, cool. And then one of my little cousin and my friend's little brother was there. We was all driving, and back in my hometown of Loudoun, there was like this very small road. So it doesn't matter if it rains, snows, sunshine. If you take this road too carelessly, you'll slide off the road and hit a tree, which ultimately that's what happened. Well, the reason why my eye got cut is because the two people in the backseat, which was my cousin and the little brother, was coming towards the dashboard. So I had reached behind me with my left hand and caught them as they was coming towards the dashboard or windshield. And I turned this way, and then my eye hit the whole dashboard and pinned me to it and cut my retina, cut my eye from the very behind of it, the back of it, to the front. So it sliced it open like a grape. At least that's what they told me. And, I lost everything. I lost my scholarships that I had for football. I was going pretty good schools. Everybody backed off on me because they was like, there's no way he can come back from that. He'll never be the same. And like, I fell into that deep depression. Like, man, I just lost my whole life. 17, 18 years old, you're like, man, I just lost everything. Lost your vision. You don't know how to cope with it. No one can tell you how to go with it. So I went from being 170 pounds to dropping down to 130, 135 and just not wanting to do anything whatsoever. My grandparents were hounding me and like, you need to get up and go do something. My grandfather was the main one sitting there saying, hey, we need you to get up, do something. And ultimately, I ended up watching UFC on TV one day. I was like, I would like to try that. No, I had no intention on fighting. And I had ran through a guy who introduced me to KMA. And that's where I've been at.
So, Dre, how long were you in that tough mental state of depression before you really started to get back and become active again?
Probably about a good year or two. It was hard. Like, it took a lot of me to step out because, people stare whenever they see something wrong with, they see something weird about somebody, they stare. And that was my biggest thing because, I went from being this football player to, like, everybody knew, so on and so forth, to like, man, I gotta actually hide my face and people want to see me, and I'm like, I didn't want to see nobody. So about a year to 2 years I stayed within that secluded state. And yeah, I think MMA is the one that brought me out of it. With Eric and everybody came, hey, they really brought it out of me to be like, it's okay to be the way you are, we accept you for it.
So what happened to kind of get you going towards that direction? Was it something where maybe been doing some MMA classes before your accident, or did you have any sort of experience in that type thing before your accident, or did it all come after?
Growing up during the summertime, me and my cousins boxed and we wrestled and stuff like that. So I guess you could say that, but it was more of like, you fight with your cousins. It was just a straight fight after that point. So, that's what we did. We got bored on the weekends or bored during the days. Like somebody got mad at a football game or a baseball game that they lost in. And next thing you're scrapping right then and there. So, it was never one of those things where like, oh, I'm going to do this for my life. Because at first, before I took my first fight, I didn't have no intention on fighting at all. I just wanted to do it to see what it was like. And then just to build that self-confidence in myself.
So how'd you get from that point of having no intention to getting in the cage for the first time?
Eric. Yeah. Eric. Eric was the one, because I think at the time I was helping. Man, this has been a long time ago. It was back when James and Chris Wright were, terrorizing Tennessee as amateurs, like high level amateurs. Like they were winning belts and all that stuff. So they were getting ready for a fight. And about this time, they was like, we need somebody size-wise. So I was like, okay. I was training, and Eric's like, hey, Dre, could you be a body? I was like, okay, what do you want me to do? He's like, all I want you to do is just try to take them down. I was like, okay, I'll try my best. And at this time, like, Chris and James been, you know, beating me up pretty regularly. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to fare about this. I'm going to try to survive and do the best I can. And then by the end of it, he was like, hey, you got a natural knack of this. Would you want to try it? I was like, well, maybe I'll try it. And then by the time October of 2011, I was already fighting. So it was pretty fast. Because back then, you didn't have to do a bunch of crazy stuff. We sparred like every single day. And this was back when like Scott Holzman was still a local pro and Vince was about to go to Strikeforce. We had Matt Traylor and all those old school guys. So that's been that long.
We're visiting with Dre Miley, MMA fighter here with Valor Fighting Challenge, and he is working towards an opportunity on the big stage here, hopefully in the very near future. I'm Vince Ferraro with Tim Loy on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Just kind of wrap that topic. It's wild to say, you know, it's been over a decade now that you've been in the game. You're still a young man, considered a young man, but have got over a decade of experience now in the game. What are some of the things that you would say has changed the most about the MMA scene here over the last 10 years? Because it certainly has evolved.
The growth of it, how everybody is wanting to do it, and then seeing a lot of gyms come and go, and then you see a lot of fighters come out of nowhere. People want to fight, and people are getting more educated about fights, and you know, it's in the publicity it comes with it, because it's almost like taboo that you're a fighter now. Like, you're almost the closest thing to a celebrity around here if you're a fighter. So the growth and the publicity is the biggest thing that I see.
Dre, we've called your fights before and know how opponents would try to handle being in the cage with you. Describe for our listeners what that was like and what opponents would try to do to you and maybe make assumptions about you based on your background.
Oh, every single opponent has never like looked at me. I'm like, oh, he comes from KMA. You know, they got Ovince. You know, he comes from a good gym. They just look at him and say, oh, this dude's got one eye. And then what their strategy is, 10 times out of 10, is that they'll circle towards the left side. But then, like, they find out that that's probably the worst thing to do because my left hook is pretty strong. So not really worried about it. Used to, that's all people would do. They do it, you know, that's all they really do. They always go to the left side because they think, like, my vision's only, like, it's only like section off from the right side, which is weird because I can see as much as anybody else can with two eyes, if not better.
A big fight coming up for you here in just a couple of weeks now. It's going to be at VFC 80 All Pro event, a big one. You know, lots of big fights on this card at the Cotton Eye Joe. And, you know, it's been 15 months now since you've been in action. So I know that you're chomping at the bit to get in there. You've had a lot of fights fall off last minute due to either be it weight or just guys kind of flaking on their commitments to you. You've got Jose Johnson coming in. No way, Jose. He's 11-6, all the way from Texas. Really tall guy at Bantamweight, 6 feet tall. Contender Series alum. He actually fought Ronnie Lawrence, former Valor 135 champion that ended up going on to the UFC. So I know you're familiar with him. Let's talk a little bit about this matchup. And it's going to be two guys that are, you know, right on the cusp of that call up to the big shows. I know you guys are both super hungry.
Oh, yeah. Whenever this fight got announced, I couldn't help but, you know, smile from ear to ear because I had watched him and Ronnie Lawrence fight. And I was like, man, I said, I'm going to end up fighting one of those two. Like, I just know I'm going to do it. And then sure enough, you know, after the Mitchell fight fell through and the Sweeney fight and the Sewell fight fell through, they was like, you got Jose. I was like, all right, cool. Yeah, I get to fight this guy. I know what this dude's about. So it's one of those, like, you know, he's a striker, primarily all striker. Yeah. That's all he's trying to do. He's going for the knockouts. Dude's got very good Muay Thai skills. So got to watch out for the kicks and the knees and the elbows as much as you do it with every fight. So, you know, it presents its own opportunities. So I'm not really... I know that at the end of the day, I will get a call up if whenever I win. I'm not really focusing on that. I'm really focused on just getting in there and doing my job because this guy is a symbol of what the people are to come. Like at this point, there's no people with, you know, low records. I have to fight up. So this would be a hell of a statement maker. And I put this guy away. You know, they can't deny me anymore whether I have two eyes or one eye.
Dre, you also teach classes at KMAA. You obviously have a lot of teammates that have unbelievable stories as well, incredible influences in your life. How do you think you have impacted other people, whether it's in classes with your students or it's other fighters in your gym, to show the perseverance and that warrior spirit that you have?
I think that I show them that, like, you can do whatever you want to do. Like, there's no excuse valid enough to be like, oh, well, I got this going on. It's like, well, I have one eye and I've been doing this for years. You know, hopefully that I am inspiring people to keep going. And, you know, a lot of people say that they tend to look up to me, but I really don't know. That's really what it is.
I ask if there's any guys, at the gym that are currently kind of helping him get ready for this big fight. You know, I know there's a lot of KMA guys on this, so I know the atmosphere at the gym has to be pretty electric with so many people getting prepared.
James has been helping me a lot. Jason King's been helping me. Vince has been helping me a lot, been taking me and giving me pointers to what to do, how to combat this kid. You know, and me and Nick Gertz has been sparring. So whenever me and him get to sparring with each other, you know, we tend to have really good fights. So everybody that's literally fighting on this card, we all help each other. So it's never like I'm singled out to one person. So James is helping me, Jason, all of us. Everybody's pulling their own weight, and I'm helping them also.
Cornering last Valor Fighting Challenge event as well at the Cotton Eye Joe, and always everybody helping each other out. Real quick, on our way out, tell everybody how they can follow you on social media and keep up with your career.
Okay, thank you for having me on. You can follow me on Instagram at Dre Miley MMA 135, or you can just look me up on Facebook. It's just Dre Miley or Dre Ku Miley. So I'm really just on those two. I do have a Twitter. I don't really use it as much, but it's Dre Ku 135 MMA. So follow me on any of those.
Hey, Dre, you're the man. Appreciate you. Good luck April 2nd, and thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Dre Miley from KMAA, an unbelievable story, a great fighter, and an incredible influence on so many people, and glad you had a chance to hear from him. Tim and I will react to our conversation with Dre, and we will update this Saturday's Vegas card for the UFC. That's next here on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal.
What big events are coming up in MMA?
Well, right now, Vince and Tim have the answers.
This is the pay-per-view and MMA show preview on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Welcome back to In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal with Tim Loy. I am Vince Ferraro, weekly MMA here on the radio in Knoxville, Tennessee. Our podcast will be posted shortly after the show is over. We're now on Thursday nights, 8 to 9. Right after it's done, you can go to our website, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, either the audio tab or the show tab. All of our shows are archived there, or you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere else. Subscribe to In the Cage MMA Radio and listen to it there. Subscribe, rate, share. You can give Tim a follow on social media. Find Tim Loy on Facebook, and then you can hit me up on Twitter at Vince Sports. So Tim, we just heard from Dre Miley. What a fun conversation with him, and what an inspirational young man, and a great opportunity for him coming up April 2nd. What do you think of what we heard from Dre Miley?
Well, you can just tell he's super hungry for it at this point. You know, after a decade in the sport at this point, even still being a young man, he feels like it's his time, and he's anxious and he's hungry for it. And he's been patient, I feel like, up until this point. So I feel like, a win here over Jose Johnson, which won't come easy. I do feel like that will move the needle and surely turn some heads.
So much that we could have continued to talk to him about. So hopefully he'll continue to have success, and we'll hopefully get him back on the show in the not too distant future. Okay, UFC Vegas 22. It's our preview segment. Let's jump in. Our main event for this Saturday is a middleweight bout. 7th ranked Derek Brunson at 21-7. 10th ranked Kevin Holland, who had arguably the best or one of the best 2020s with 5 wins and up in his record of 21-5, and now is suddenly in the main event of a UFC fight night in Vegas. Size this one up. How do you see it?
The odds makers have this as essentially a pick'em. You know, Holland, or well, that's what it opened as anyway. Now Holland has been bet up to minus 170, so the money's coming in on Holland. I think it's close, man. I think that there's the line of thought that you know, Brunson may begin to fade late in this fight. He could maybe bank the early rounds getting takedowns because Holland's takedown defense really isn't there. We've seen lesser fighters than Brunson take him down, and we've seen Brunson take down Yoel Romero. So we know the takedown's there for Brunson. It's just once we get to rounds 3, 4, 5, will Brunson slow down? But also, will Holland slow down? You know, it's not like he's typically known for going five rounds either. So this is a really hard one to call. I think Holland obviously has got the better striking. He's longer. He's got the better you know, technique on the feet, and he's a BJJ black belt as well. So he's dangerous off his back. But man, as far as making a call on this one, I guess I'm going to lean the younger Kevin Holland. Brunson, up until this point, though, if you think about it, has only lost to the elite of the division. If you're a top five guy, you beat Derek Brunson. If you're not a top five guy, you're not getting past Derek Brunson. So he's kind of a gatekeeper to the stars. The question is Kevin Holland worthy of that top tier? Is Kevin Holland in that top tier? You know, he won five fights in 2020, was very active fighter of the year. The question is he belong in that elite group?
Well, I think Brunson is a good test for him. I don't know just yet. I think he convinced me more later in the year, Tim, that there was maybe more legitimacy than one or two fluke victories in some people's eyes last year. I don't know that Brunson is the elite to where we can truly check that box just yet. I like him to win the fight, though. I think with the length and his answers with his striking, even when he gets into tough positions, he seems to find his way out of it and he can put you out. Brunson's a tough guy, but I think Kevin Holland wins this fight, but I don't know that really we find out everything about him just yet.
Yeah, I think that ultimately Brunson will probably get some takedowns. Everyone's taking Kevin Holland down. It's just, can he do it, you know, five rounds, a lot of rounds to do it. Can he keep doing it? You know, and Brunson has been known to fade a little bit as we go. So I could see Brunson kind of jumping out early, maybe banking the first round or two, and then Holland is starting to turn the tide.
Average fight time, Kevin Holland, 14:42, Derek Brunson, 6:32. So that's a little bit to what you're saying of a fade.
And for those people out there that do the live wagering, if you think about, you know, Brunson, if he gets those early rounds in, then the lines are going to really start to go the other way. Maybe you jump on Holland at a better price.
It's a great point. All right, co-main event, 15th-ranked Gregor Gillespie in the lightweight division against Brad Riddell, who's part of that City Kickboxing camp. And Gillespie is the favorite at minus 244 at last check. Riddell's 9-1. Gillespie's 13-1. Pretty decent fight, whether you like it in a co-main event slot or not. It should work and be entertaining, right?
I think it's a fine co-main event here. And it doesn't get any more, you know, grappler versus striker than this. Brad Riddell, great kickboxer from City Kickboxing there with Adesanya and the gang. Gregor Gillespie, a NCAA Division I champion wrestler up until his last fight, undefeated at 13-0 and really had a rocket strapped to his back. But last time out, he got knocked out by Kevin Lee, the first time he really kind of stepped up to top-level competition. So has he worked on things since then? I'm sure he has. He tried to strike with Lee, which was silly. I don't think he makes that mistake and tries to strike with Riddell. I think he goes to his bread and butter. I'll take Gillespie by decision.
This next fight, best odds for shortest fight of the night.
Right.
Tied to Tuivasa at 11-3, taking on late replacement in Harry Hunsicker, who is 7-3. Supposed to be Dontell Mays, but Mays not medically cleared.
It's going to be the biggest lopsided line of the entire card. I'll guarantee that. Minus 500 or better, I'd imagine. Tuivasa is just a really, really tough style matchup for Hunsicker here because Hunsicker is, you know, he props to Hunsicker for stepping up and getting this opportunity. Short notice, and you know he's going to try to make the most of it. He's going to let his hands fly. He's going to go out there and go for the finish. But Tuivasa is like one of these, you know, he's just got that hard head. He's a Samoan. He's going to have the chin. He's going to be hard to finish. I think Hunsicker goes out there and gives it all he's got early for the first minute or two and eventually gets clipped by Tuivasa. Tuivasa by knockout.
Bantamweight bout, Adrian Yanez at 12-3, minus 213 favorite over Gustavo Lopez at 12-5. What do you think of this?
Interesting fight here, especially in its placement. You know, Adrian Yanez is a guy that has a pretty good amount of hype coming off of the Contender Series. He had a real big finish there. Lopez, a little longer in the tooth. I think Yanez is going to be just a faster guy, the more explosive guy, more pop. As long as Lopez doesn't take him down and kind of grind him, I think Yanez is the play.
Two 16-win fighters matching up in a welterweight bout. Max Griffin at 16-8, Keenan Song at 16-5. Griffin minus 196. Do you agree?
Yeah, this is a fight where, you know, I typically don't want to be on Max Griffin at near 2-1 ever, really. But at the same time, he's just got more ways to win. Song has been brought along against the very, very lowest tier of competition in their attempt to kind of appeal to the Chinese demographic when they signed him. And he's just really not a really top level guy. I think Griffin has got the better striking and the better grappling, and I'd go with Max Griffin.
And what's slated to be the first fight on the main card features the wife part of a husband and wife duo that's both on the same card. Cheyenne Bays at 5-1 against Montserrat Ruiz, who's 9-1 in a women's strawweight bout. Ruiz, an Invicta vet, but Bays minus 370 heavy favorite, Tim.
Yeah, that's a little too wide for my liking. I do think Bays wins. I think she's got the better striking, the better output, more volume. Ruiz, Invicta vet, just hasn't seen the top level competition yet. A little bit wild. Originally supposed to be Kay Hansen, which would have been a better fight. I like Cheyenne Bays, but I don't like laying minus 370. That's a little too wide, especially for entry level women's MMA in the UFC.
I'll run through the undercard and you tell me what jumps out. The main event of the undercard is two ranked fighters in the women's bantamweight division. 9th-ranked Marion Renault against 11th-ranked Macy Chason. Also, Grant Dawson versus Leonardo Santos in a lightweight bout. Middleweight bout, Trevin Giles against Roman Dolidze. Bantamweight bout, Montel Jackson, goodness, a minus 714 favorite over Jesse Strader. A women's bantamweight bout, which I'm a little surprised it isn't higher up in this card. 15th-ranked Julia Avila and Juliana Stolyarenko, and then JP Bays, husband of Cheyenne, against Bruno Silva in a flyweight bout. What jumps out to you about the undercard?
I think the Marion Renault Macy Chason fight's interesting. It was pushed off from an earlier card, I think, with some COVID situation. But, you know, I do like Macy Chason here. She's so big for a bantamweight, and Renault hasn't handled really the physical opponents very well, and she's 43 on top of that. So I like Macy Chason there. Grant Dawson, another really good prospect, 16-1 out of James Krause's Glory MMA. But again, he's a really heavy favorite over a world seven-time world champion and BJJ Leonardo Santos. So kind of like a sprinkling on the underdog there. The rest of the undercard is kind of whatever. There's nothing too much else that jumps out at me, but I would agree the Avila being so low on the card is interesting to see. And I do think they like JP Bay, South African guy, good-looking dude, fan-friendly style. They'll want to push him in the flyweight division.
That's our preview of UFC Vegas 22. That's on Saturday. It'll be on ESPN Plus with a main card and also the preliminary card, all starting at 7 p.m. in Las Vegas. Coming up next, it's the MMA Lightning Round presented by Knoxville Martial Arts Academy with a main event change on a fight night card before UFC 261. We'll tell you about that and what we think of it when we come back here on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal.
There's still a lot of MMA to tell you about and react to. Since we're short on time, we'll have to make it quick. But we promise it'll be good. Here's the MMA Lightning Round on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Welcome back to In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal with Tim Loy. I am Vince Ferrara. It's lightning round time, and it's powered by KMAA. They offer classes for children in self-defense, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, MMA, personal training, kickboxing, yoga, and martial arts. For the in-depth training at KMAA, many students have catapulted themselves into professional careers in the UFC, Bellator, and Invicta fighting promotions. They will help you achieve your goals. Call them at 865-771-9775 or visit their website at KnoxMMA.com. They're also located at 4201 Martin Mill Pike in Knoxville. So, Tim, upcoming calendar for the UFC beyond this weekend. Next pay-per-view is a week from Saturday, March 27th in Vegas. It's Stipe Miocic against Francis Ngannou 2. And then Alex Volkanovski against Brian Ortega, another title fight. The rest of the card, kind of looking through it, Tim, a little bit of a drop off after that, but man, those are pretty nice for a top heavy pay-per-view for the UFC.
Definitely top heavy, but the two main fights are great. You know, both these title fights are exciting. That could either one could headline, honestly. And I'm excited for those. And on the undercard, you've got some name value. You've got Sugar Sean O'Malley. You've got Tyron Woodley, some guys like that. But it certainly doesn't live up to 259 on paper.
Yeah, Woodley versus Vicente Luque. Thomas Almeida against the Sugar Show Sean O'Malley. So we'll see if he is back on the rise. So yeah, there's still some good fights on that card. The change in the UFC main event on a fight night that we talked about, Paulo Costa is out of his main event fight night bout with Robert Whittaker, as he has dealt with COVID and he still has medical lingering from that. So Kelvin Gastelum steps in to take on Robert Whittaker. What do you think of Gastelum as a replacement for Costa?
I think he's a fine replacement, you know, coming off of a win. And as we were talking earlier before we were on the air here, who won the first time that those guys faced off? And actually, they haven't, believe it or not. That was shocking to me.
Yeah, I was convinced as well. We both were. But man, I like it because we saw a different Kelvin Gastelum. We didn't see one that maybe was on the decline. We saw a much improved guy. And Whittaker has looked really good his last couple of times out. Tim, awesome job as always. Really appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the fights and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, can't wait, Vince.
That is Tim Loy, matchmaker for Valor Fighting Challenge. I'm Vince Ferrara in the cage, MMA Radio 99.1, the sports animal. Good night.
Thanks for listening to In the Cage MMA Radio as Vince and Tim bring you inside the